CinemaSins has a fan club. It's called the Sin Club, and members get all sorts of things like early episodes, bonus videos, merch discounts, and even monthly bonus podcasts. Membership starts at $3 a month, and you can sign up now at patreon.com/CinemaSins.
And that look on Anthony Carrigan's face, like, where he's just like, oh no, like, oh, what have I done?
Welcome to SinCast, presented by CinemaSins.
All right, everybody, welcome to the SinCast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined by Jonathan Woggins from CinemaSins.
Hello, hello.
And today we're going to be doing a mini pod.
Bill and Teddy pod?
I really don't know where you would go with this.
I don't either. I don't know.
But we're doing a mini pod on Bill and Ted Face the Music, the third in the Bill and Ted franchise. There were two movies way back 30 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. This is 29 years, I guess, since the last one. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. I think Bogus Journey came out in 91.
You know, and those comedies that come out like 15 plus years later, those comedy sequels are, you know, there's a really good track record.
Yeah. You know, here's the thing that I always, yeah, exactly. There's the track record for these is not good. The thing is, you know, there's another thing, and I don't know if other people experience this when they watch a movie that has a sequel that's like, you know, many, many years since the last movie came out. But the way movies are made have changed. So like, it doesn't like a lot of times these sequels that come out many years afterwards don't mm-hmm. even feel like they're a part of the same universe. Like when Wall Street Money Never Sleeps came out, in like 2000, whatever, 11, 12, whatever it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was, like 27 years after, or well, it would have been 24 years after, the last one came out. Mm-hmm. It's like, God, so many things have changed about movies since that last Wall Street came out. And, you know, I mean, it's, and usually they're just trying, they have a hard time recreating magic. That's the thing. You're so self-aware about what happened in that first movie that you're, mm-hmm. you're just, you know, there's something affected about these movies, but yeah, that's the thing. That it's been 30 years, you know, give or take since the Bill and Ted movies, different time, different era. And now we're making a modern version of this. And it, you know, it, I don't know whether it succeeded or failed. It's still just as silly. It's
weird, right? And it's also, it's one of these, I guess, I don't know if Dumb and Dumber 2 was kind of in this same vein. I feel like social media is so much different even since, you know, that came out a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But this feels like a movie that was created because of social media. Like, this feels like a movie that, like, was just made for fans, which I honestly didn't even know. And I'm still not sure how far reaching the fan base for this movie, for this franchise is, but I do know, at least based on like the movie people that I seem to follow on like Twitter and whatnot, they all seem to be really excited when this was announced
mm-hmm.
A year and a half ago or whatever, to the point where I was like really confused, you know, like yeah. I was like, do we love, I mean, I rewatched Excellent Adventure just a couple years ago and, or a year and a half ago or so. And I mean, it, you know, it's fine. Like it, and I remember liking it a lot as a kid and I remember, you know, quoting it and all that kind of stuff. But it just feels like a movie of that era, right? It doesn't, mm-hmm. I don't know how relevant it is now. Not that that's a bad thing. I mean, there's a lot of movies we love that probably aren't very relevant now. And then Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey is just so bizarre. Like That is one of the weirdest sequels ever.
Mm-hmm.
And it falls right in that era too. It was like that early 90s. We had stuff like Gremlins 2
yeah.
and like Batman Returns. And there were just like all these just really bizarre follow-ups to like these, you know, these hit films. Mm-hmm. And Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey kind of falls in that avenue. And I feel like this new movie, if we're going to get into it, I feel like this new movie is kind of some weird amalgam of those two movies. Like it, like, I feel like it's got its heart in the right place, and I feel like it's trying to be a little more, like, I feel like it's trying to be a little more coming from the heart, like probably like the original film was a little more heartfelt, I guess would be the best way to put it. Mm-hmm. But then it's also trying to capture that really bizarro kind of world vibe that the second one had. Mm-hmm. And whether that works for you or not, I guess, you know, depends on you, but I don't know. That's kind of where I felt like what it was trying to do. And then, like you said, also trying to be relevant in 2020 with a style of a lot of style that just isn't a thing anymore. Right. I mean, even like the music that, you know, Bill and Ted was trying to promote, like the Wild Stallions, mm-hmm. In 1991, even, that was about to become almost extinct. You know, we were about to get grunge and all that kind of stuff. So that kind of hard rock era was kind of dying anyways. So I don't know. This is a really weird movie.
It really is. I was alternately enjoying aspects of it. And then it would, and then like right next, then after that, I would be like, God, I'm not enjoying this.
Yeah. I almost feel like this is kind of hard to talk about without getting into spoilers. So maybe we should,
I'm going to spoilers very shortly, but yeah. Like it is to me the biggest C movie that you can come up with. Like if you were to think of a C movie, this is a C movie.
Yeah, I agree. And it's getting like, I mean, for the most part, I didn't look to see what it was in Rotten Tomatoes at this point, but I feel like it's in the 60% range maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a lot of people are not necessarily praising it, but a lot of people really seem to be enjoying it. Well, I'm sorry. No, it's 81% on Rotten Tomatoes.
What is the average rating on that?
It's 81% critic and 80% audience, which you don't see that often, like that mm-hmm. close. 6.75, which I mean, that's a little high for me, but that's not terrible.
What it means is that everybody's kind of fallen on that, right? They're just kind of falling on that. This is all right. And that's why it's getting so many positive reviews. And it looks amazing at 81%. But 6.7 is average. I mean,
that's probably like a C+.
Yeah.
At the highest. Yeah. You know, now the audience score is a 4.02 average, which I assume is out of 5. That's mm-hmm. a little higher, which that makes sense.
Yeah.
But for the most part, like people seem to be really enjoying this more than I did. But like you said, there are moments in this movie where I was laughing a lot,
mm-hmm.
Which we'll get more into in spoilers. Because there's somebody who kind of steals this movie for me, and I don't remember him being in the trailer, so I guess I will wait to talk about that. But then there's a section of this movie that is downright terrible,
mm-hmm.
Involving where when they first figure out what they've got to go do, and they're trying to, and this is in the trailer where they say they're going to go steal the song from themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That whole section I found not funny.
Yeah,
let's just say that.
I agree.
And for those that don't know, the plot is basically that. And this is another thing about this movie that is, it falls in that generic sequel thing where we've got to bring our heroes back down mm-hmm. so we can watch them rise again.
Yeah.
So like their failures basically in every way of life, like, you know, it's like Ghostbusters 2 or, you know, take your pick.
Mm-hmm.
And they still haven't like united the universe with their song like they've been told they were going to do in the first two movies. So this is yet another adventure of them trying to find out what that is.
Yeah.
They have to face the music, I guess.
Well, and this is this type of thing right here is where I'm like, nobody knows how time travel works, right? Nobody really knows. The only thing that you can really know is what you've seen in movies. And of course, Avengers Endgame did that whole thing where they're like, you know, stop thinking about Back to the Future and Terminator. We're going to do our own thing. But I never understand some of the time travel rules in these movies, especially in this one. Like you can say that everything's happening, like every time that has ever occurred on Earth is happening concurrently with each other, mm-hmm. all you want to. But if you're going to say that one area is the future, then the one part of the future should kind of know what the song is, right? They should know what the song is that they're going to sing and unite the world with and everything, or else I don't feel like they can exist as they are. And like, if they know for a fact that there's this song that unites everybody, they should know what that song is. I don't get the logic behind this whole thing.
Now, I get, like, in the first one, you've got the premise that they're about to be separated. And so, like, that's just part of the timeline, right? That the George Carlin character, Rufus, has to go back and make sure that doesn't happen. Like, that I can kind of get behind.
There's more of a loop feature there.
But at this point, like you're saying, like I can't even think of the actress's name that plays like the main like Time Lord or whatever. Oh God, what is her name? Holland Taylor.
Holland Taylor. Yeah.
Yeah, she. Like you're saying, I agree. I think this is what you're saying. Like, she should already know how to get that song. Like, at this point, I agree. Yeah. Like, and I don't think that's a spoiler.
Like, how are they in this society in the future?
Yeah.
How are they there knowing that this is going to happen, but they don't know the song? I don't get this at all.
Yeah, I don't either. And then if the song never happens, how are Bill and Ted able to go see future versions of themselves to try to steal it?
Yeah, this is what I'm saying.
Especially the first movie, it's been a minute since I've seen the second one, so I can't talk as much about that. I don't really know how much that one really has to do with time travel more than it does with them going to hell. But in the first one, like, I feel like the time travel stuff is kind of interesting and kind of fun, like the way they go about it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas here, it's like here they kind of want to do two things. Like they almost want us to take it seriously, but then they also do this thing where they poke fun at it.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I agree with you. Like, that's confusing. And then the other thing, like I was saying, I hate this thing where we have to bring these people back. Like Ghostbusters 2 is the one I always go to, because I've never understood why at the start of that movie they have to be like frauds. And because all that does is it makes the end of the first Ghostbusters sad.
Yeah.
Because like, you're like, well, that's great that they saved the city, but in like 30 minutes, you know, the mayor is going to sell them out and, you know, they're going to be considered frauds.
Yeah.
And they're going to lose all their. Yeah.
Why couldn't it have just been that they ran out of ghosts to track down, or ghosts got smarter,
or they're just successful and this is a new case we're going to watch them take on. You know, I feel like I've seen this Bill and Ted movie like twice, like, you know, like where they've got to go do all this crap to get back to where they were supposed to be at the end of the first one, you know, and it's just. I don't know. I find that frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like you're just remaking the same movie this whole self-aware bullshit.
They could have been still successful. Mm-hmm. Like you're saying, they could have been making songs, but they just weren't the right one.
Yeah.
And their daughters could still have figured in. And by the way, we're going to get into spoilers on that. There's a whole thing that I wish they had done with the daughters that it's kind of disappointing how they went about that. But anyway, let's get on to spoilers. I think we both gave it a C, right?
Yeah. C minus. I'm good with a C. Yeah. But I'm somewhere C-C in that minus range.
C minus is fine too. I think that's totally valid.
It definitely doesn't get like it. Now there are parts of the movie that get into D territory for sure. But like the movie as a whole, it's enjoyable enough. You're not going to get that low on it, but it definitely has a lot of issues.
Yeah. All right. Let's get on to spoilers and talk about those things.
And this basically is Kaiser Soze.
Luke's father is actually Darth Vader. She's the sister and the daughter.
No. I'm reading the books.
So it's obviously great to have Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter back.
Absolutely.
And everything. But they give these characters two daughters, Samara Weaving and Bridget Lundy Payne, who are fantastic. I love them so much in this. Mm-hmm. They're sort of exactly what this movie needs, but you know, it, 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 you know, I was sitting there going, I like Keanu Reeves, I like Alex Winter, I like Bill and Ted, but man, every time it went back to them, I was like, nah, we're back to stupid Bill and Ted again.
I love that their names were like, they named their daughters after each of them. Like I guess Bill's daughter was named after Ted, kind of. And then Ted's daughter was named after Bill, right?
Yeah, well, like it was Thea in the IMDb, it says Thea is Samara Weaving. Yeah, and Billy is Keanu Reeves' daughter in this.
Yeah, Bridget Lundy Payne.
But Bridget Lundy Payne, they've got her hair all the way down perfectly and everything. It's like exactly like Keanu Reeves.
They brought energy to the movie that was sorely lacking.
That's what I'm saying. It's I'm wondering if there was an incarnation of this where they were thinking, let's make a young Bill and Ted and even maybe a female Bill and Ted mm-hmm. movie. And they decided, nah, that's not going to work. And it may not have, for all I know, but when you see Samara Weaving and Bridget Lundy Payne in this movie, it's like, oh my gosh, I want them to be on the screen all the time.
With Kristen Schaal, right? Like you want Kristen Schaal, yeah, like Kristen hanging Schaal. Out with them.
Yeah. I was wanting to see more of them. You may have been alluding to Anthony Carrigan as the Terminator robot.
No, you're right. Anthony Carrigan. Maybe there's two then. No, I was actually referring to Kid Cudi.
Oh, Kid Cudi's great in this too. Kid Cudi was my favorite. Who knows everything about time travel.
Yeah, there's that the scene with him and the two daughters when time is folding in on itself. Is that what's going on?
Yeah.
These people from the past are popping up in the present and vice versa. And yeah, so like,
and even
Kid Cudi just appears.
I, right. Yes.
Yeah. And then they're just like, hey, Kid Cudi. And then they just start having this like 3 or 4 minute discussion on what type of time travel scenario they're currently in,
mm-hmm.
which is just hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then later, like Bill and Ted go to him for advice.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Anthony Carrigan is outstanding as
Anthony
dentist.
Carrigan is a NoHo Hank on Barry. If you guys haven't watched Barry, you need to, but, they've outfitted him as this, like, I don't know, like completely white Terminator, wannabe type of thing that goes back and, you know, is told to kill Bill and Ted. And then it sort of starts getting becoming self-aware and, you know, and he realizes his real name is Dennis Caleb McCoy. And, and there's a point, this is I thought the really funny part is when they go down to hell they're like, Bill and Ted are like, he's a robot. He went in and now he's in hell. How's that happen? I don't know. Doesn't matter. Yeah. Let's go.
And when they go past those
people. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you about to talk about that? Sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
People and like afterwards, like, yeah, yeah, go this way or whatever. And then they have this conversation after they leave where it's like, yeah, it's a robot in hell right there. Yeah. That's weird. Yeah.
And he just kept saying, I'm Dennis. Like he would just randomly.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he was excellent. Yeah. No, it's almost like everybody. And, you know, William Sadler's back as Death. And he's really good. And then the princesses that in this time, their wives are played by Jama. I don't know how to say her. Is
it's
it Jama?
Jama Mays. And then Aaron Hayes, who you may have seen in Children's Hospital.
Absolutely. And you might remember from she got totally like I feel like Aaron Hayes is another person. Like we were talking about Megan Fox on that Rogue thing. Aaron Hayes has become this person I've rooted for because she got totally like screwed on this Kevin James sitcom.
Oh,
called
really?
Kevin Can Wait. Where she played his wife in the first season. It was a hit show. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, Kevin James just decided he needed Leah Remini back.
Really?
And so they killed off Aaron Hayes' character.
Oh, that's too bad. I really like her.
Yeah, she's great. And they brought Leah Remini back. So it basically just became like King of Queens 2. And it got terrible ratings after that.
Yeah. I mean,
and died.
Ego run amok, man.
Oh my God. So I kind of feel bad for her. And I always, when I see her now, I'm like, yes, you go, Aries.
Yeah. I love her. I don't know why she's not used more often. Jayma Mays used to see her in like a million things.
Oh yes. Glee is probably the thing that most people know her from, but she was in the Smurfs movies and she's great. The League.
Yeah. The League. Yeah. Yeah. there's some fun stuff too, where like, you know, Beck Bennett is playing Deacon, the younger brother of Ted.
Yeah.
And like, he is like, you know, we remember that, that Missy was married to Bill's, dad in the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's moved on to, Ted's brother Deacon.
Yeah. Well, she was married to Ted's dad.
Yeah, married to Ted's dad at one point. She's being passed along through the entire family, basically.
It's Amy Stott. She's back to play the role. So it's really pretty funny.
Right.
Jillian Bell's in this movie. There's, you know, she plays the, I guess the psychiatrist or whatever that they're seeing at the beginning. It's a really good cast. And it's kind of like you're saying though, it's like, I find everyone so much more interesting. As much as I like Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter, and they're perfectly fine in the movie, I find every character so much more interesting than I do. And that's kind of a problem.
Here's the other problem too, is that, we have these nostalgic memories of Bill and Ted back in the day. And they're much younger. Now they're older and they're not really acting the same way. I mean, Alex Winter still kind of, I mean, there wasn't really any sort of affectation that Alex Winter was doing in those originals, but Keanu Reeves definitely was. He was definitely in that surfer kid mode back in the day, where just, you know, everything was whoa and all that. Now that he's older, and I understand that there's probably, you know, well, hey, he's grown up. He's probably not going to be like that anymore, but you're not seeing the same character that you want to see either. And like, this is not the same Ted really.
No, not at all.
Yeah. I mean, he's older. Sure. Huh?
Yeah. These guys are in their 50s, you know, in real life. And I mean, it shows, not in the way they look or anything, but I'm just saying like they're just older, out of touch, which I guess they're kind of supposed to be, but I don't know. They're just not, for whatever reason, they're just not as interesting. I don't know if they just kind of assumed that people would just be like, oh, it's Bill and Ted. Like, we know them. Let's concentrate more on these other characters. And then they just kind of got left in the mix, you know, I don't know.
And so what you have is their story is not as interesting, even though they have, you know, they're trying this fun quote unquote thing with them running into each other in different phases of their lives. None of them, by the way, are believable.
No, not at all.
None of them. Like they're outwardly funny, but like if they're like this in their 40s, apparently they're not going to be suddenly completely different in 5 years.
Later. Yeah.
And so like the first time they go back, they're playing this, like, you know, strip mall bar or something like that.
Yeah.
And they're assholes, like out of nowhere. They're just assholes. And then, the next time they go back, they're playing a joke on them and pretending that Dave Grohl's house is their own house.
They're giving them Dave Grohl's music.
Well, and I don't even know, like, how in the world does the time machine, when they're going back to find their original selves, why does it take them to Dave Grohl's house? Like, how does that, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that was a little confusing. Like, I guess they did that in the first one too, though, where they were just like, I mean, I guess, well, I always assumed in the first one, they were just going to the time period and the location.
It made sense there because they were saying like, it didn't make sense that they kept running into the famous figures immediately after they got out of the phone booth. But in this case, like they're going to a specific part of time where apparently Bill and Ted have been known to live in Dave Grohl's house.
Like, that's what I'm saying. It doesn't make sense. Like, it's almost like in this one, like they took the wrong thing from the first one and thought that they were like, it's almost like they're supposed to be like a tracker on them. And
Yeah.
They can locate them. And I just, there was nothing that made that make sense. No, I agree.
So like, yeah, I mean, and yeah, and they're doing something fun there. Ha ha ha. They're sitting in Dave Grohl's house and they're pretend. I mean, I don't, and it's been a while. It has now been about a week since I've seen the movie. I can't even remember why their older versions of themselves are trying to sabotage the ones that are traveling through time.
Oh, because they're not trying to, they're actually, they think they're going to make them take this song to the future and fix everything theory.
The Dave Grohl one. Yes. But like when they go back and they're in the bar, they're like actively trying to run away from them.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All that. I mean, it could be, they just don't want to get involved or something.
I don't know. That's what they basically say. They say that they've made enough of a mess of their lives and, you know, they kind of want to avoid them. And then I guess when they realize they can't and they get to that Dave Grohl part, they decide to try to, you know, help them. And then we have the prison scene, which was in the preview and is beyond dumb.
it really is.
Everything about that. And it's so weird because like there's this interesting thing where they're older. There's this one part where they go to where they're older and they're like in a retirement home or a hospital. Mm-hmm. And there's kind of an extended version of that in the end credits.
Mm-hmm.
And the old age makeup and stuff is actually pretty good, mm-hmm. which is usually not the case in most of these movies. But then you take that and then you go to like the prison scene and they look ridiculous in that scene. Like that is so bad. Like, you know, Bill's, and I think they're kind of supposed to, but
they
it's like,
are. They're kind
it's
of
so insane though. They go too far.
Yeah. They exaggerated
with it. Yeah.
But none of that is nearly as interesting as the other stuff. That's a problem for your movie that is called Bill and Ted Face the Music.
Yeah, exactly. You want to see Thea and Billy because, you know, they're going and getting, you know, they're doing like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, right? Yeah. They're going and getting musicians from the past to try to help the Wild Stallions get a band together. So they're going and getting like Jimi Hendrix and
the Louis Armstrong guy is hilarious. Who plays Louis Armstrong in this? He's always got this giant smile on his face. Jeremiah Kraft.
Yes.
But yeah, they go back, they get Louis Armstrong, Jimi Hendrix, Mozart, and then like even farther back to Ling Lun, like long time ago. What did she play? I can't remember what she's played.
It was like a flute or something.
Yeah,
it was
like a flute.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes. So doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Anyway, the thing that I kept expecting to happen with the daughters is that when the problem was presented to them by Bill and Ted in the garage and Bill and Ted leave, I thought we were going to find out that Thea and Billy were like musical geniuses. Mm-hmm. And I thought we were going to find out that they had been playing around on like computer software and stuff. And they're like, you know, like our buddy LaRange, who can like put together a whole bunch of like different sounds and everything and create something brand new out of it. And I thought it would have been a very 2020 thing for them to be able to come up with something that's amazing and mix up all these different musical performers. And they were going to come up with the song that way. Cause all along, you know, with the you know, the prediction back or the whatever, the in the future where they're saying it's Logan and Preston, you knew when they used the last names, it's got to be the daughters.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know that it's, I mean, if you've seen the movie before, you know the daughters are the ones that have come up with the song.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I thought they were going to actually create it. Like they already had something laid down. And then once they had Jimi Hendrix and Mozart and Louis Armstrong and everybody, mm-hmm. they were going to be able to play this. And of course, anytime you try to say these people are the best at what they do and they're going to do this song that's going to blow your minds, they're never going to be able to make a song that in the movie that makes sense to the audience. That, you know, like that's why you avoid stuff like that. It kind of reminds me of like 30 Rock and Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip. Is that what it was called? Studio 60?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Where they're like, let's show the skits that they're actually doing. Mm-hmm. And the skits are never as controversial or as funny as they're talking about. So like, it's always good to actually kind of avoid that. And of course the song at the end of this that unites the entire world and time and blah 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 is whatever, you know. It's whatever.
Well, we also have this ridiculous timetable going on where they've only got like, I don't know, an hour or 70 minutes or something like that when all this begins.
Yeah.
Which I don't know, like, once again, going back to like the first, like in the first one they had like a day at least, you know, like that would have made a lot more sense if they had like 24 hours or something, because obviously, like, if we ever send this, I mean, that'll be easy to rip into,
mm-hmm.
Because this takes way longer than they say. But because of that, they get this, like, they remember that, like, at the very end, they all of a sudden are like, you know, wait, but I've never understood how a song in the present would unite everyone in the past and future, which I don't think that was always supposed to be the case. But
yeah,
in this movie, they kind of retcon that idea. And then there's like, so they have, I was totally confused by all this, but they have to get musical instruments into everybody's hands.
Yeah.
I don't know. That felt very tacked on. Like,
yeah, it did.
And maybe I missed something, but like that to me just felt really weird and thrown in at the last minute. And they've only got like 5 minutes at this point, and you've got like Thea and Billy over here trying to construct this song like on the go.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bill and Ted have that. Well, you do get the funny scene with Kid Cudi there though, where he's explaining what they have to do.
Yeah.
And then the wives pop back up, you know, because and that's a whole other thing. There's a lot going on in this movie. The wives are like time traveling as well, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah,
they're trying to see if they can find a better version of Bill and Ted, something like that.
They're looking for a any kind of era where they would be happy with Bill and Ted, because that was the thing that Jillian Bell is doing, that the couples therapy where they actually, all four of them, go in to the therapy at the same time. And this is one of those frustrating comical situations mm-hmm. they throw in where they're like, you know that usually couples go in by themselves, right? And they're not saying, hey, they wait until everybody is sat down and everything. Like, why isn't this doctor saying no, only one couple at a time? And nobody's saying what they need to say to Bill and Ted. So they set up this whole thing where they can purposely make Bill and Ted misunderstand everything that is being said in that therapy session. And they keep saying stuff like, we love you guys. And or never mm-hmm. can say, I love you to their wife. Mm-hmm. They're just saying like both Bill and Ted, like both of us love you guys or you know, something like that. So they keep screwing everything up in couples therapy. But
yeah, and it seems silly. And like, I mean, at least the way that, you know, Jayma Mays and Aaron Hayes were playing it, like they seemed like really happy couples. Like they mm-hmm. didn't even seem like there was really any conflict, other than I guess I could see them being like, you know what, you guys need to get a job at some point, like this is getting ridiculous. But like, but they're well aware that they have time traveled because they're from the past.
Yeah.
You know, like there's that, and I even kind of forgot about that because the way they were trying to play it. But then there's that great moment where I think it's Jaime Mace or maybe it's Aaron. I don't know which one of them says it to Jillian Bell. They're like, no, we're actually princesses.
Mm-hmm.
Which was actually really funny.
Yeah.
So that just seemed like really unnecessarily contrived conflict that was never there. Mm-hmm. So I didn't get that at all. I mean, you know, don't have them in the movie. It's not the end of the world. I mean, I like those actresses, but I'm just saying like what they did with them didn't make a whole lot of sense. Like maybe just have them at the beginning and the end.
Yeah.
Which basically that's all they are anyways. So
yeah, it's always a shame when you see like actors that you really, yeah. really like and they're only mm-hmm. used sparingly. And you know, I feel like I don't know, I've seen Erin Hayes in so many things now. I feel like someone's gotta have something where she's like got a bigger role than mm-hmm. what she's playing and everything. And
I think she's the one because I was looking up these she was born literally the day before me.
I was about to ask you that. Because I was like, whoa, that's awfully close to John's birthday.
My birthday is the day after hers.
Yeah.
So that's really funny.
Yeah.
But we were born on separate parts of the country too. But
it's true.
But, but anyways, yeah, I thought that was really funny when I was going through and looking up their credits, because I was like, I knew I recognized her, but I couldn't remember from what. And then I was like, oh yeah, Children's Hospital. And then I was reminded of the whole Kevin Can Wait thing, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's her.
Yeah.
So,
ultimately, yes, I think most people are going to have a pretty good time with this movie. It's just that there are so many things about it that you just go, oh my god, if this maybe had a little bit more time to kind of, you know. I don't know. I think the Bill and Ted part of this movie needs to be better than it is.
Yeah,
it
I know. Is. I agree. I feel like they just kind of rested on their laurels with those characters and just, you know, and I mean, like I said, no, I mean, and Reeves and Winter are, you know, it feels like they never left. I mean, mm-hmm. they do a perfectly fine job. It's just like you said, their story isn't that interesting. And also when you're talking about these sequels that are so many years later, it's really hard not to be like, you know, this is what you came up with, you know, 29 years later, like this is the movie that we're, you know, but I don't know, but maybe it's kind of like that song at the end, right? No matter what they did, maybe they're kind of screwed in that area. I don't
know. They are like, you have to almost write this movie from scratch and not even think about the originals when you're making it, which is nearly impossible. But,
And the stuff they throw in too, like they, like, is it Kid Cudi that says station to them, I think, towards the end? And they throw in these references and none of them land at all. Like they have Death playing a hopscotch or some bullshit, you know, which is referencing the you know, them playing games with him in the first one or the second one. And I don't know, all that stuff just kind of falls flat. Although that is kind of funny watching him. I mean, William Sadler is always welcome. You know, I don't care what he's doing. Like he's just one of those actors that.
Yeah.
I'm just glad they're using him.
He's great. Like when I saw that Death was in this, I was like, I hope that's William Sadler. And sure enough, they got him.
And they kind of came up with a reasonable way to get him in there. Although I didn't really completely understand why their daughters would go to hell, but whatever.
Well, it's because of this stupid Terminator thing that's shooting everybody.
But why would they go to hell as opposed to heaven?
I don't know. I think the whole point of what that Terminator robot thing does, I don't know if I thought that Terminator robot thing just sent people to hell. I didn't think.
Gotcha.
That was
it.
I don't
That's
know.
Probably right.
Maybe they
That's
are, right. maybe they are dying. Maybe they are apparently dying and going to hell and then coming back. But
that scene, by the way, where he shoots all of them, like he murders like the, or whatever, whether he kills them or not, he evaporates the, mm-hmm. the girls, the daughters, and like Jimi Hendrix and all the musicians and stuff. And that look on Anthony Carrigan's face, like, where he's just like, oh no, like, oh, what have I done? You know, he's got that kind of look on it.
He's so good, man. Like the story that I've heard about Barry is that he was supposed to be like a one or two episode character.
Mm-hmm.
And then, he was so good that Bill Hader was like, no, man, we're going to keep you for the rest of the series. It's amazing when somebody in a robot costume can steal so many scenes.
And I knew I recognized him too, because this was before I had even looked up who it was. I'm like, I know who that is, but like, who is it? You know? And it, and I mean, he's almost like, he's so good. Like, but like in that scene, like where, you know, he kills everybody and then you can see that look of despair on his face. It's almost like a Will Ferrell kind of.
Yeah.
Or Jim Carrey even. I don't know. It's something like, you know, just really, you know, really well acting comedians. He's definitely in that league. You can tell.
Yeah.
If somebody would just give him the, you know, the movie or the role to go with that, roll with that. So.
Anything else to say about this movie? I think
we're on the same page. I mean, I'm not going to disparage people from watching this. I mean, if you have any interest in watching it, you know, assuming you've listened to this part, you've seen it, but if you haven't for some reason, there's no reason not to watch it. It's really short. Mm-hmm. It goes by really quickly and, there are funny moments, but it's just, it's almost kind of like Scoob, right? It just, I don't know how much it feels like a Bill and Ted movie, but I really enjoyed everybody else, that was in it.
it's one of those things, man. There's so much going on that's good around it, but the main part of it is not as good.
I actually kept, and I know you liked this movie more than I did, but I kept thinking about Jay and Silent Bob, the reboot.
That's a good comparison.
Because I feel like both of these movies are made with so, like, there's so much good intention behind this movie. And the same goes, because I mean, Kevin Smith has even talked about why he made Jay and Silent Bob, and it's a love letter to Jason Mewes, and it's a love letter to his fans, and you know, all that kind of stuff. And I feel like this is in that same type of avenue, but it just never really completely comes together. Because there's moments in Jay and Silent Bob the reboot that are hilarious. And then there's moments where, you know, they're not that great. And much like this, I feel like Jay and Silent Bob are kind of the weakest parts of Jay and Silent Bob the reboot, which is kind of funny, you know, and kind of a problem.
It's a weird thing. Like, they need to have these characters back so that you want to come watch the movie. But like, when everybody else around you is just the best part.
And if you heard that they were going to make a movie where it was going to be based on Bill and Ted's Daughters, you would be like, I don't want to see that. Like, you know, like, I mean, if you heard about this 2 years ago, you'd be like, oh, that's crap. Like, why would I want to watch that? Not work at all. And then now that I'm watching this movie, I'm like, I wish you had made that movie.
Well, and see, here's the other thing, though. Like, if they had made the movie about Bill and Ted's Daughters, it wouldn't be Samara Weaving and Bridget Lundy Payne playing those characters.
You're probably right about that.
I mean, they wouldn't. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, the reason why they're so good is they were able to be cast in quote unquote smaller roles. If they were asked to sell the movie, then it would have been, who would it have been at this point?
I know what you're saying.
Amanda Seyfried, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah. Like, I was like Hayden Panettiere. something like that. I don't know. You'd quite go like Scarlett Johansson, but.
Huh. Yeah. I mean, I was sitting there thinking Amanda Seyfried might actually be too old for this. I don't know who I would put in there, but whoever is marketable at this point and they're like 25, 26 years old.
Yeah.
We wouldn't get the same kind of actors. You wouldn't get the same story. I mean, I guess you're in a lose-lose or whatever situation with that kind of thing. You're not going to make a movie with Samara Weaving and Bridget Lundy Payne.
I'm not as familiar with Bridget Lundy Payne. I know she's in that, there's a show on Netflix called Atypical. I think that's pretty popular.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not as familiar with her, but, I know Samara Weaving is one of those I've loved from the first moment I saw her, but she has not necessarily been like in the best movies.
Right.
Ready or Not, which got to kind of showcase how good she could be. So fucking good
in that.
That was really good.
Yeah.
But like stuff like I know there are fans out there of The Babysitter. I wasn't a fan of that movie. But I really liked her, you know, like I was like, oh, she's really good. And then I feel like there's something else. There's been a couple of those like lower budgeted, like horror movies and stuff that she's done where, she did the Picnic and Hanging Rock miniseries, which I've still never seen. She's also in Ash versus Evil Dead. For a little bit, but she was like in that movie Monster Trucks with Oh, she is in Three Billboards. I forgot about that.
She has a very brief role in that. Yeah.
But definitely if for some reason you haven't, Guns Akimbo, that was a really bad movie that she was in. Ready or Not, though, if for some reason you haven't seen that yet and you're listening to this, I would highly recommend that.
Mm-hmm. That's a movie that gets better and better every time you watch it.
Yeah, for sure. That was a lot of fun. That was an unfortunate, didn't do as well at the box office as it probably should have. But I feel like it's getting its notice, though. I feel like enough people are talking about it now.
Yeah, it certainly is.
But anyways, this is a perfectly fine movie at times, but it's also at the same time, I don't know if disappointing is the word, because I don't really know what I was expecting.
Yeah, I didn't have high expectations
for it. But I guess after I saw that people were being pretty positive about it, and I think I was a little let down that I didn't get that, you know, like
well,
I didn't have that.
We have to realize this. The reviewers and critics nowadays have never been closer to the actors that they have needed to review. And I think we're seeing a lot of times now, there is a sort of a correction going on with movies like this. I mean, I think if this had come out, and you know, people didn't, and Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter weren't beloved, like they are, like, you know, I mean, this, they've got years and years of like, oh, these guys are good guys type of, status. You know, you would probably see a lower score. It'd probably be around 50 or 60%. For something like this, but
yeah, like if it was like if this was like I was about to say James Woods, I don't need to go that far, but like if this was somebody that's not as like maybe as well loved, even though they're a popular actor, maybe it's not getting the same type of recognition. And speaking of which, we're recording on Keanu Reeves' birthday, and the reason I know that is because if you go on Twitter right now, there are thousands of people telling him happy birthday because people just love the fuck out of that dude. And rightfully so. I mean, from all accounts and purposes, he's an amazing person.
Yeah.
You know,
so, I mean, that's what I'm saying though, right? Yeah. It's going, that's sort of being baked into everybody's opinion is that, you know, I feel like a lot of these critics and reviewers are like, oh, I interviewed that dude and he's so good. Let's, you know, and then, you know, that's sort of what's going on, or they've grown up hearing all these great stories about these guys. And so they're, you know, like, you know, I don't know how unbiased we are these days with some of
that's,
these.
No, that's totally fair. And well, you know, we talk to people in the industry that we really like, and that probably does affect in some ways, like
maybe we have
a little more appreciation for what they're doing. Just because we're like, hey, we like that guy or we like that girl. But I also think this is one of those movies where I don't know how much that really matters, because like this is such a harmless movie that like if people want to give it like a grade letter higher, you know, whatever. You know, I mean, I can't really sit there and throw too hard of an argument. I just know I did not enjoy it overall, as much, you know, as obviously some people are. But when it's good, it's quite good. And I think most people that would listen to this, if they haven't seen it, I think they'll probably be perfectly fine with it. And I mean, now if you just don't like Bill and Ted, then obviously this isn't going to change your mind, at all. I would recommend watching the first one or something if that's the case. But it's perfectly fine. It, like you said, it's a C movie. Like it's like the definition of a C movie.
Yep, it is. All right. So what did you guys think of this movie? Go to Sincast presented by CinemaSins on Facebook. We're also on CinemaSins Twitter, Music Video Sins Twitter. We're on SoundCloud and we're on Discord. If you want to get on Discord, you can go to our Reddit page and find a link on the right side and click through there. Or you can go to Facebook and private message me and I will give you a link there. Where can people find you, Jonathan?
You can holler at me on Twitter. I am at SamLoomis13. And I also do a podcast called Behind the Sins every week with Aaron Dicer and Danae Hughes.
All right. That's going to do it for this mini pod. It's Chris Atkinson and Jonathan Watkins. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.